Good evening, you all. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey, and along with John, KC2 WGB, John and Dick attempt to run something called the Technical Med. And you guys have heard it lots of times, but there's occasionally a new person signing into the TechNet, so I give this little monologue in the beginning explaining what the TechNet is and what it does. So bear with me for a couple of minutes. The TechNet tries to educate people on how the hardware really works. There's a lot of complication to wireless hardware, transmitters, antennas, receivers, transmission lines, propagation, meter scatter, moon bounce, the WSJT, weak signals, the digital modes. There's 26 different kinds of ham radio. So there's a lot of stuff to discover and to discuss and to teach each other. That's the main thing that the TechNet people do. They teach each other how to enjoy it, how it all works. There's a lot of brain power in the New York City area of northern New Jersey, southern New York State, eastern country, and western Connecticut, and Long Island. So we try to tap into that brain power, and hopefully people who hear a subject being discussed will have some familiarity with that, will chime in and give us the benefit of their knowledge on the subject. Not everything you hear on the TechNet is 100% accurate, but eventually it does become accurate. It's kind of peer-reviewed by way of the website by which it's all being recorded by a very enthusiastic guy named Mike Perry, KC2NJI. Oh, 6 or 7 years ago, established a beautiful website which you can go to at www.amateurradio.tangovictor. So the last 6 years of TechNet are all recorded there, and you can play them back, and there's lots of information you can gather. And that's an interesting resource, and particularly nowadays, because you're going to hear some disruptive material. It's been going on for some time. It's going to continue a little bit longer. It is my guess that the disruptive material is coming from a unhappy individual with a lot of time on his hands, and it's a control issue, I think. In other words, he would like to have control of the TechNet, the swap and shop, the InfoNet, the computer net. He would like to control these things. He doesn't feel he's got enough control in his life. And as I said, it's a sad situation. To get mad at him is ridiculous. You should be feeling sorry for him. Unfortunately, he's also talked a couple of his friends into joining his effort. He's located at the repeater site. He's talked a couple of his friends who have higher power mobile rigs to go around and periodically hands off to them in order to try to create confusion. And now, the next thing for you to decide is how angry you're going to get when it occurs. It's going to occur. To be forewarned is to be forearmed. And now, you have to make sure you don't over-catastrophize. In other words, in the big scheme of things that happen to human beings, how bad really is this? If you compare it, for instance, to an individual that, like an American soldier in Afghanistan, who's putting up with being shot at and losing limbs and getting post-traumatic stress syndrome and whatever, in the big scheme of things, this is rather minor. It's a person...
Repeater, time out.
In the big scheme of things, it's a person saying derogatory things and making ugly sounds. In the big scheme of things, how really bad is that? I mean, nobody has died. Blood is not being released, if you know what I mean. It's just an annoyance. And now you've got three choices. You can either decide you're going to get angry and not put up with it, you turn off the rig and you tune to some other frequency. That's choice number one. Choice number two, you can decide that John and Dick can usually hear what's going on by listening to the input frequency. We hear the questions, we repeat them on the air, and therefore the TechNet proceeds, but more slowly. The third choice is to wait until the recording takes place a day or two later on the website, amateurradio.tv, and play it back by that means, and fast forward to the sections that have the disruptive material. So we've got those choices. As I said, I think it's a control issue. I'm amazed that the guy, the main guy who's located near the repeater site, he's able to talk friends into joining his effort. I think he's using those people. I'm amazed that they're willing to take that risk of eventually being found, if you know what I mean. But that's human nature. Alrighty, that's enough of the unpleasantness. The way the TechNet runs is that you sign in by giving me and John your call letters, your name, and the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. So a typical sign-in would sound somewhat like this. 82 BHY, Jim and Yes. That would be a typical sign-in. Looks like we're getting early jamming already. And that's one of the videos you can tell because they run out of power. And some of them, we may have to wait until that particular person goes into a less favorable position as he's traveling up and down the highways. So, give us your call letters and check in right now, K2RIW on the TechNet. Kind of thought we'd be hearing from Jim. Okay, Jim's number one on the list. Number two. Go ahead. Who's the next person to sign in?
And there's Jim up at the Space Report.
And we've got Wes. Anyone else? Okay, the last person was a little bit weak. Would you please repeat that a little more slowly and maybe phonetically?
Dick, I believe the person trying to speak is W2DMP.
Very fine, Jim. I think it was Whiskey 2 Baker Mike Papa. And what's his name, if you happen to know Jim?
Hey, I should know it, but I never remember the names. I only remember the call signs. I'm sorry.
His name is Joe, KB2DPDQSY.
Very fine. Doing permanent damage, knows that it's Joe. He knows everybody. Alrighty. So we've got Jim, Wes, and Joe. Anyone else to check in? Give me your call letters and name right now.
KC2WGB, John with the mailbag.
I knew that was going to be there, John. And John, as you know, is handling the situation of where amateurs don't yet have their license. They're studying for it, and they mail in questions because most of what the TechNet is a live give and take on the air. And for the most part, John and I are not offering to do a free written consulting service, but we are offering our services as on-the-air interlocutors, so to speak, to try to help people get their questions answered. And so a person who doesn't have that ability to get on the air yet mails an email to John. And John, you might tell that person who would like to send emails to you, repeat your email address. Go right ahead, John. KC2WGB, K2RIW in the TechNet.
KC2WGB. Yes, for anyone who's interested in sending something to mailbag, I'll be glad to forward it. Just mail it to my email account at juliabravo5oscar@aol.com, and I'll be glad to handle it for you. KC2WGB. Back to you, Dick.
Dick, quickly, please.
Yeah, who is that?
How you doing, Mark Antolopoulos? Did you ever get that email on global warming I sent you?
I sure did, Mark, and read it, and later on we'll discuss it. Do you want to check in with a question or a comment about that particular subject? It's over to you, Mark.
Oh, it's quite possible. Okay, thank you. I'll be listening, as usual.
And WS2N with the Space Report, 36.
Very fine, Paul. All righty. Let's start off with the first questioner, which was Jim.
Have it.
Who was that?
Wait for the beep.
Yes, sir. That was Eric telling us that there are four beeps that we're supposed to wait for, and also wait 1 second beyond that, just to be on the sure side that everything gets reset properly. Because we do have people who listen by way of IRLP and Echolink, sometimes out of the area. Okay, Jim. The microwave voice, I'm going to say the microwave, the VHF, UHF voice of, and the HF voice of Port Washington. Go right ahead, Jim. KD2, VHY, K2RIW on the TechNet.
Thanks, Dick. I had a question today about what is code. This is a week. I knew it before, but I had gotten a bit rusty. So I got myself 5 words per minute. The 5 words per minute. In the whole thing, I can copy a nice 5 words per minute. And I have a question. How would I go to improve that speed? Because not many signals on the air on HF are 5 words per minute. So I was just wondering if anyone had any ideas on how to increase CW speed.
Yeah, that's a very worthwhile endeavor. When it comes to increasing your code speed, practice. There are various organizations that you can buy a tape recording of Morse code being properly sent. That's one approach. KD5YI, I think it is, sells tapes. We're going to pass it over to the group to suggest their favorite place of getting tapes. Also, the American Radio Relay League, American Radio Relay League headquarters in Newington, Connecticut, on 80, 40, 20, 15, and 10 meters, to my knowledge, I think on almost every one of the ham bands, at a designated hour on a designated day, they send out Morse code. So if you look at, if you go to the ARRO website and you look up the word Morse code, I'm pretty sure you'll find out their schedule. I believe it's also in every issue of QST Magazine, their schedule. So listening to over-the-air Morse code sent by the ARRL is one very good approach. I'm assuming they still do it. And then just simply tuning across the novice band, listening to real live conversations on either the novice band or the general portion of the band. Choose the guy that's sending slow enough, and you'll hear some unusual characteristics of the Morse code. Sometimes guys have got a particular fist, as they say. In other words, a particular way of sending fast letters in big spaces or slow letters in small spaces and so on. But you might as well learn the way it's really done on the air, if you know what I mean. As you practice the Morse code, you're going to see some very interesting things happen, Jim. And that is, when your code speed gets somewhere around 8 words a minute, all of a sudden, the mind skips a few of the steps. In the very beginning, you may have learned the dots and dashes, so to speak, which you really should try to listen to it as dits and dahs. That helps. And your mind goes to a lookup table when you hear a certain combination like da, did, 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 and you look up and say, what letter has that? And the letter B, the boy, Baker, has that particular combination, and you write down the letter B. Well, somewhere around 8 or so words a minute, all of a sudden the mind skips some of the steps, and you'll see that occasionally you'll hear a sound, and the hand will write down the letter, and you'll say, who did that? and it becomes quasi-automatic. Another thing to know about Morse code reception is don't try to keep up exactly. Good common sense would lead you to believe that whenever you hear a sound, you try to think of what letter it is, write it down as fast as you possibly can so your mind is clear and ready for the next letter. Good common sense. Don't do it that way. In other words, a well-practiced Morse code listening person will lag one or two letters behind. In other words, he hears the letter, he lets the mind process that, And he may hear one or two letters later before he writes down that particular one. It's going into a kind of a mental pipeline, if you know what I mean. So you don't have to write down the letter absolutely immediately. If you insist on that, sometimes you'll get frustrated. A particular letter will give you trouble, and you'll be concentrating on that and miss the next two or three letters. So don't be afraid to lag a couple of letters, if you know what I mean. Eventually you'll realize that what the mind is doing is hearing a sound and converting that into a letter, and eventually you start hearing combinations of letters. The example I often use is the letter B-E-N-T, for instance. Now, people who start getting really fast at Morse...
Repeater. Time out. Repeater.
The people who get really fast at Morse code, they don't hear individual letters. They hear groups of letters, and sometimes... a particular word, the word B-E-N-T, is a da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It just has a funny swing to it, for instance. And eventually you'll start hearing sound. Now, Mel K2KEY, our silent key, who used to be my sidekick on the TechNet before John came along, he used to get Morse code recordings, tape recordings from various places, and he liked going to sleep listening to Morse code. In other words, he put his head on the pillow, put some kind of an earphone on his head, and listen to Morse code as he went to sleep at night. So it's just a matter of practice. You'll also notice something else that happens, Jim, and that is the Morse code, you would assume that as you're practicing that the Morse code increases while you're practicing. That's not the way it works. You'll discover that, say, for instance, your Morse code speed is 6 words per minute today, and you practice for a half an hour today, and maybe a half hour, 45 minutes, beyond that, I don't think it's worth going beyond that. But during the practice, you will not necessarily hear your Morse code increase. However, you come back the next morning, and all of a sudden you're up to 7 or 8 words a minute. The mind has worked on the problem overnight, if you know what I mean. During the practice itself, you don't necessarily see the increase. So it's got some peculiar characteristics. Now, the other people who just love Morse code, who have opinions as to where Jim can get tapes, maybe you've personally been listening to the ARRL, and you know the schedule as to what days they transmit force, fast and slow. In other words, the ARRL sending Morse code, they do it on alternate days. On the odd days, they do it at 5, 7, 10, and 13 words a minute, the slow speeds. And on the other alternate days, they do the fast speeds of 10, 15, 20, 25, and so on. So you have to choose the right day to get the right speed. And maybe just once in a while listening to the higher speed just to know what it sounds like would be kind of interesting. So you Morse code experts out there, please give us the benefit of your wisdom right now as to where do you think Jim should get the tapes, when he should listen, and so on, to get the practice as well as listening on the air to real Morse code QSOs. Give me your call letters right now. K2LIW at the TechNet.
And 2SLW.
N2SOW. Stop up your name, sir, and then give us your information on the subject.
Okay, my name is John, and the full sign is SLW. I suggest Jim go to Google and look for G4FON. G4FON. CW trainer. It's very good.
Okay, John, that sounds very good. So, if you Google Golf 4 Foxtrot Oscar November, if I understand you correctly. So by Google, he Googles Golf 4 Foxtrot Oscar November CW, and I think you're saying you'll find tapes right there on the internet. Is that what you're saying, John? Sounds like a very good source. I'll back to you, John. And to Sierra Lima Whiskey, K2LIW.
It'll come up on the top of the page, Dick. It's not tapes. It generates code, QSOs, or words. He'll find it very useful. He can change the speeds. It's fantastic.
Downloadable trainer.
Okay, John told us about that information. It's downloadable, and I guess you could then put it into your tape recorder or put it into your particular computer and play it back as many times as you like. Who said that it was downloadable? Give me your further information, sir. Please identify yourself. K2RIW.
Okay, this is Kilo Bravo 2, Mike Alpha Romeo. Name here is Gabe. When downloadable, what it does is you go to the website, you download the program, you can work speed, select 1 through 9 noise, if you want to. You can select Kirby, means you want to do it. Because after you want to practice, you want to leave out. So that's how that trainer, that particular trainer works on the computer. But it's on the computer, and of course you can use your sound card and computer to listen to that particular program, what connectors, the code generates, things like that. KB2.
Okay, I'm going to repeat some of what Gabe said. If I understand correctly, Gabe, once you go to this particular website, you're able to select which speed you want to listen to. You can download it, and I think you were giving us other pieces of information about the downloading process. You might want to repeat some of that if you can, Gabe. And if you can increase your power a little bit, it would help. Back to you, Gabe. KB2, M-O-R, I think it is, K2RIW, the tech man.
Okay, Kilo 7. It's basically, what I got for, what's your depth program? What character do you want to focus on? Basically, generate character for the program. So you can see what you want to focus on. Select the speed, your speed, up to, I think it's like 6 words, something like that. 5 words a minute. You can select the reset mode if you want to set the CW with a white and black sound. If you want to set the CW with very quick, listen to it that way. one of the programs. You can also select the of the for I'm sorry. GRS Sigma. Venus is 2MA.
Okay, that's me. That is the HAB2MA on in Young. If you heard more of what Dave said, go right ahead and tell us what you heard, John. KB2, here we go. KB2, KC2WGB, KC1SW. Go ahead, John. Okay, I was assuming that John heard more of what Gabe said, and we may have to get a little bit of a repeat. So I think what Gabe is telling us is that you have quite a few options when you go to that website as to what speed you want to listen to, how you want to download it, and so on. So it looks like it's an awfully good website. Once again, John, I wonder if you heard a little bit more about what Gabe said, and you could repeat it. KC2WGB, K2LIW in the TechNet.
K2L.
Go right ahead, Bernie.
Basically, I didn't hear all of what Gabe was talking about, but the excellent trainer, an excellent trainer, you downloaded your a lot of options for how to learn the code and how to best study it. What I wanted to pass on to James, in his Googling, there is a gentleman out there who has books on Morse code. Not meaning books on how to learn Morse code, but has classic novels and converted them into Morse code. Provides the raw code file, and I forget how you play them back. So you can play them back at different speeds, so you can get faster and better if you play them back at a higher speed, remaining at a higher speed. So it's kind of a way to break things up once you know all the letters, because the book kind of gives you a way to do it. But it also,
okay, so it's book to where book itself Morse code. But by the way, anything you do to ensure how you order can be helped. We could look for the Uber. And this person is he's running simply hype. Alrighty, so I keep Jim to look network days by way of get code information. We may have a little trouble from you read the gym. You want to get later on when the interference. We'll discuss it further. KDCH1 into if you want to make the transmission, it's up to you. K2RA, you can check that.
W2, sorry, are you calling me?
Not yet. Now, this is our system. The back of the gym. If you want to make a transmission, it's up to you. And if not, you want to come back later, we'll get a little more discussion. But so, as you can tell, there are books you can go to, which will give you a story already converted into Morse code, and that makes the copy of the Morse code a little bit more interesting. KD2 at BHY, if you want to make a transmission, K2LIW. You got it, Jim.
Okay, thanks, Nick. That's a lot of full information. I would like to thank John that gave me that information. That's a nice KD2HY. I'm not sure if you can cover the interference. Thank you all.
We heard you. Perfect. Okay, the next on the list. Let's see, who should we go to next? Let me go to John. Because he can always get through by various techniques. KC2WGB, and maybe we're going to move up the mailbag a little bit earlier, but maybe you've got a question, John. KC2WGB, K2RAW in the TechNet.
Oh, we could do a high stick. Let me see. Let's look at my notes and see. It's a little early for me. I'm just in the middle of that. First of all, am I coming over it?
Beautifully. I'm seeing you on the input. I'm hearing you on the input, Sean, so don't worry. KC2WGB, K2RIW.
I can hear you. KC2, Dick. Okay, just a second. Maybe you can hear something else.
Roger, Dodger. Yeah, we've got a mobile station out there tonight that's having a grand old time, in which case I may have to go to one of the alternate techniques of getting through. trying to remember who else was on the night. Mr. FLF Mark, let's see how well your signal comes through. Mark, if you're there, you're with me. KQRI, you'll be in the next head.
Oh, probably not too wonderful. I had two FLF.
Oh, I hear you. You're nice. Nice and strong. On the internet. So I can hear everything you say. Go right ahead, Mark.
Okay, I copy that.
Yeah,
over here in Mother Tongue with the J-pole on the roof. But it is what it is. What's cooking? So did you like that letter or what?
Yes, I did. And the only thing a little bit discouraging about the letter is that the guy uses somewhat non-professional language, if you know what I mean. He's got a pretty strong opinion. He expresses it in a way a little bit different than a person who is in the field as a professional, so to speak. And maybe he is a professional. But his method of expression will turn some people off. It doesn't really matter whether he... So the subject that Mark is talking about is the global warming. And depending on who you talk to, you can either be led to believe that global warming is a very serious problem already occurring, and that mankind's efforts are creating greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, and therefore it's an accelerating problem. That's one possible way you can interpret it. Another possible way is that Mother Nature goes through all kinds of thermal cycles, as she's done for millions and millions of years. And so far, this particular thermal cycle, although it may be a little bit faster, and maybe mankind is speeding it up a little bit, that in the big picture, one possible interpretation is that the global warming is going to occur with or without man's efforts, and that even if we do cap and trade and everything else to cut that down the amount of hydrocarbons we put in the atmosphere, one possible interpretation is that wouldn't really make any difference. So there's at least two or three sides to the story. And Mark has given us a very nice website where a letter, I should say. Let me think, what was it? Was it a website? I think it was a website, Mark, where you gave us, which expresses one point of view. You could, if you want to, I've forgotten what the web address was, but if anybody wants to read what you presented to me, Mark, you could tell us that web address. You're coming through beautifully tonight. Mr. FLF, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, copy. Yeah, you think he wrote... coming in. He wrote that for me. He toned it down a little bit so I would understand it. You know, I've heard him on the phone talk, and it's like, I go, you know? But that was most of the layman in me to understand what he was trying to get across. That's why it sounded like that. But basically, yeah. Anybody wants a copy of that letter, email me at... Nancy2Fox, Lima Fox, at optonline.net. I'll be happy to forward one to you. Dick?
Okay, that's a very good offer. So what Mark is telling us is N2FLF at optonline.net, I think you said, and you request the letter that was mailed to Mark on the subject of global warming. It's another informed point of view, and so you might want to read both sides of the coin, so to speak, so that you, next time you're having a Monday morning discussion with your fellow employees at your particular company, you might want to be able to express all of the opinions as to the pros and cons of the global warming issue. Global warming was being discussed in the middle 60s. It's the first time I heard it. I think that was also brought to our attention last week. Somewhere around 1967 or so, there was quite a few popular opinions on the subject of global warming then. So that was, 40-some-odd years ago. 45 or so years ago. So it's not a recent thing. People are led to believe by way of Al Gore's presentation on The Unpleasant Truth, I think is the name of it. People are led to believe that it's an only recent thing in recognition. Not necessarily so. It's been around a long time. When you do a plot of the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere versus years and parts per million, you do see a very sudden rise, and there appears to be a correlation between man's use of oil and coal and other kinds of hydrocarbons and that rise. You could easily say that there is a correlation there. And you got to be careful how you use data of any kind. Any kind of statistical data, there's all kinds of ways you can find correlations that might not be real. It might not really be random. I mean, a hell of a lot of people end up in places like Atlantic City or Foxwood because they think they understand how random variables work. they think they've got a system, if you know what I mean, and maybe not. Most of the time, not. I mean, when you look at the richness of those places, you realize that somebody is financing it, and you know who. Okay, correct me on that website, your email address, which people can request a copy of that particular letter that was sent to you. I think it was n2flf@optonline.net. Do I have that correct, Mark? N2flf, K2RIW?
That is correct. You got it. Nancy 2 Fox, Lima Fox, at optonline.net. Thank you, Doug. Appreciate it.
And I thank you, Mark, for that offer. Yeah, but see, there was another thing I was going to discuss. Oh, yeah, there's a beautiful book that came out on the subject of how do you interpret these pictures from the Hubble Space Telescope. It was in one of the latest issues of, I guess it was New York Times, I think the book section. And I gotta go get a copy of that so I can tell you about it. It looks like a very nicely done book on that particular subject. Let's see. Let me pass it over to John and see if he's ready now for one of the mailbag issues. And if not, then we'll jump right into discussing back EMF, because I've got a lot of opinions on that one. KC2WGB, K2RIW. Go right ahead, John.
Good evening, Dick. So it was not like the loss in life, I think, was 1,012. Very quickly. 1905. We had every couple of years. We had some ship. The other one was an 1805. With more veterans, soldiers not returning, and they did it.
John, any questions?
Are you done? Were you listening to a popular, John?
Were you able to hear that?
I heard you beautifully on the...
I go to the
You get the sense of that.
Okay. A little bit uncertain about that. But now, if I do my business, it all makes it easier. Hello, 1234. This is RIW testing. So I guess this particular search would be to turn off the Western input, and I'll continue transmitting this particular way. K2EJ, K2RIW, how about it? W-K2J, you're doing just fine. And, if it gets, if it comes up, we've got to leave it off. Okay, at this time I'm going to switch over to the other subject that we're going to be discussing tonight. When you go to Renee's website, which you can find at, let's see now, Renee at huntfamily.com, I think is the email address. You'll find the website that Leslie was suggesting that we discussed tonight. And that was on the subject of how electric motors work, and it looks like that particular man is emphasizing the subject of the MIAP. Back EMF is... You guys may have heard about the Western input. The back EMF motor, you have to take it to understand that you've got to take it into separate steps. If you're making a DC motor by way of a magnet matter, an electromagnet, which is the usual way a DC motor is made, you'll discover that as you coil up to the armature winding and you generate a magnetic field, the magnetic field is applied in one direction, being adjusted in the other direction. So the motor. And if you do that, you take the exact piece of machinery, and if you cast the mechanically to the outside world, you now have a set of engines you're sweeping past a magnetic field, and then it will generate a voltage. Voltage generates is what you're doing on the job here. Mechanically turning a DC motor has a permanent batter and an electromagnetic armature. The usually with a commutator, with a DC motor, or a separate AC motor, but mechanically generates voltage. That's the generation. And the other way, the other technique is the generator. The other technique is when you mechanically turn it, apply current, it becomes a motor. However, what's hard to explain, how does the motor have different amounts of current? When you put the motor under a head, like your starter motor is, in the very in the morning on a hot day, a locked rotor position, so to speak, your starter motor easily draws 100 amperes and sometimes more than that. In the locked rotor mode. If the starter motor was allowed to free run, if it wasn't being loaded down by the engine that you're trying to start, the current drain would be ahead of that motor. And how do you explain that? Well, since a turn armature is going to generate the voltage, and the voltage it generates is in the exact same direction, in other words, I put positive voltage on terminal number one, voltage on terminal number two, and the motor turns twice. That's the motor. If I now it clockwise mechanically, and I'm using the generator, terminal number one will become positive. Polarity is the same. What I mean. So therefore, the generator mode is the method by which the motor generates a voltage. The generator generates a voltage, even though it moves positive in your motor when you're pushing it. Many people call that the back EMF phenomenon. Generates a voltage. To generate. Polarity is what you're applying to it. It's very similar to what happens if I've got a, say, I've got got car batteries at 12 volts. I apply them to a resistor. I measure a certain amount of current. In the middle of that resistor, I put another of 10 volts at the exact same polarity. There's now only really 2 volts drop between the 12 volt battery and the second resistor. Will only be 2 volts instead of 10 volts. Therefore, the current that flows through the resistor will be smaller. That 10 volt battery I've added to the middle of the resistor, I could call this back EMF. So, a motor generator, once it's free to turn, does generate a back EMF. And that is the usual way of explaining how the current drain of a motor decreases when it is turning. The so-called back EMF phenomenon. Confusing about this particular website is that this particular man has supposedly made, let me try this. He has supposedly made an extra pitch by KC2WGB. Can you hear me now, sir?
John, are you a full caller? Thank you.
amateur. Doesn't make it, let me double check this thing. Okay, that doesn't make it very different. In other words, yeah, he's running three armatures in a phase delay like network. In other words, sort of like a radio engine on an airplane is the way he's running those three armatures. He seems to be fighting EMF. I mean, the real efficiency of an electric motor that's used for, say, for instance, an electric car is that it has such extremely high efficiency capability. An electric powered automobile and the actual energy coming out of the battery versus what energy gets transferred to the wheels and therefore to the road could be numbers like 90%, whereas a reciprocating internal combustion engine runs more like 15% and 20% type numbers. So the fact that an electric motor can run so efficiently in the presence of back EMF leads to believe you don't want to fight back EMF. It's the method by which the current decreases when the load on the electric motor is decreased. So why he's fighting back EMF as an explanation, or why he's trying to avoid it by other mechanical layouts, is not quite clear to me. Did his motivation for trying to either negate or get rid of back EMF, did his motivation make sense to you, John? KC2WGB, K2LAW?
KC2WGB. No, Dick, I couldn't make any logical flowchart of what he was talking about. It was interrupted. It was staccato. What I saw was it looks like by coupling the energy to the next armature was using the back energy, back EMF, for that process. So he was not eliminating it. He was using it for the next armature. And I think he claimed that, from what I understand. But also he said he compared it to x-ray views. Now, I don't know if he actually x-rayed with soft x-rays or something to look at the magnetic construction and what was happening, or whether he was just using that in a descriptive tone. I don't know, when you watched it, what did you think he meant?
Yeah, he presented pictures as if he was really x-raying the magnetic field. And a MRI machine, for instance, does run on magnetic field, but it uses the magnetic field in another way. Can you really make a picture, a so-called x-ray picture of a magnetic field, which he didn't make clear as to what was going on there? Since a ordinary DC motor is capable of 90 or 95% efficiency, his motivation for taking the back EMF of one particular pole of a motor and transferring it to the next pole, I can't believe he's going to get any excess increase in efficiency of doing that. So why bother doing it if the motor, with its real ordinary back EMF, is capable of such high efficiencies, and the inefficiency of an electric motor? You can easily find out exactly where the inefficiency is taking place by way of a thermal imaging camera and other techniques. You can find out how much resistance you've got in the ball bearings. You can find out how much complicated voltage versus current and magnetic field capability you have during the rotation because of the shape of the pole pieces. So the methods by which loss occurs, that the electric motor might not give you exactly 100% efficiency, those are well known. And back EMF, I don't think, explains it. So it's not quite clear to me, and maybe you could figure it out, maybe you couldn't, as to why he's trying to take the back EMF of the first pole and transfer it to the next pole if it's not going to increase the efficiency, and how could it if the efficiency is already so high? You might have an opinion on that one, John. KC2WGB, K2LAW.
Well, Dick, if you look at the accumulation of the magnetic field in the pole piece. Now, I don't know if he's claiming this device he's designed eliminates back EMF, or is he using back EMF? He doesn't make that clear either. I could not discern what he was doing there. But it seems that he wants to transfer that, and there's another point that, from what I understand, those three elements that are armatures, we'll call them armatures, I think they're independent. And if you notice, one starts to get the attractive force as the other one is losing its force. So How does he accomplish that? Is that being done electrically, or is this just magnetic field on permanent magnets taking place? It's a very confusing video I found.
Yeah, I agree with you. It is a confusing video. And the fact that he's got them running at, let's call it 120 degrees of phase angle difference between them, very similar to a radial aircraft engine. The fact that he's doing that, the good news of that is that he could smooth out the pulses. It's very similar to what happens with a brushless DC motor. If you go to one of these modern-day electric model airplane events, like the NEAT Fair that my son and I go to every year in September now, and the Shinhopple, I think is the name of the town, in the Catskills area, where this Long Island group holds one of the largest events of its kind, radio control model airplanes. If you Google the word NEAT, N-E-A-T, Northeast, I think it is, Aero Technology, Electric Aero Technology. Anyhow, the Silent Flyers of Long Island are the major sponsoring agency. I don't have their name correct. But anyhow, all of a sudden, Tom Hunt, I think, is the man who's the president of the club. And when you see that these actual electric motors that are being used by these modern-day model airplanes, you walk up to one of them and you grab the propeller and turn it, and you realize that they quite often will have 12 poles and 14 magnets. In other words, the number of magnets in the armature or the stator, whichever one has the permanent magnet, and the number of electromagnets are intentionally offset. And so as the motor rotates, they don't all come into play simultaneously. It's a quick thing around the perimeter of the motor, and by doing that, the amount of vibration the motor generates is drastically decreased, and you get a nice smooth power out of it. So a ordinary brushless DC motor is doing something very similar to his three-pole diagram where the three poles are out of phase. Just that the ones that are being used today have got 12 electronic poles and 14 permanent magnet poles, I think is the usual way. And it can be an in-race or an out-race, depending on is the armature on the outside or is the armature on the inside. And you get a torque advantage in one and a speed advantage of the other. But so offsetting things in order to control the vibration of this motor is a good thing to do. But that doesn't, in itself, give you any change in the back EMF. In fact, those motors themselves intentionally use the back EMF in order to give a timing pulse to their electronics. So, again, I'm not quite sure what his motivation is. KC2 WGB, K2 LA, W in the tech band.
About exactly what's going on there. So you might want to try that.
And so if we did, if I did listen to the other 28 videos, amazing. I mean, I was also a little bit put off by the fact that he was making believe he was having a conversation with NASA headquarters and asking for help in the operation of the magnetic motor. I wasn't quite sure what was going on in the first three videos along those lines, whether he was making a joke or what. The magnetic experts he was talking about, the guys in magnetics, have they figured this one out yet? So I guess you're saying there's 28 videos altogether. Wow. And I guess each one of them is trying to express his particular opinion as to how a DC motor with or without brushless DC motor type characteristics, maybe it's a brush type DC motor, and guess he's, by offsetting the poles of the motor, he's hoping to get some kind of a benefit by which the back EMF from pole number one goes into pole number two and progresses all the way around. Since an ordinary DC motor is capable of such extremely high efficiency, if he's not claiming that this gives him better efficiency or less vibration...
Can you hear me now, guys? Am I coming through?
Yes, I can hear you. We seem to have lost Dick. Just wait a second.
Okay, let's see if I can, if I come in with my alternate. what I was saying, and I'll repeat it, apparently you guys didn't hear me. The a ordinary DC motor is capable of such high efficiency. If he's not claiming a improvement in efficiency or improvement in vibration or improvement of control, what is his motivation for these more elaborate techniques? Back to you, John. KC2WGB, K2LIW.
Let me make a comment, guys. You can hear me now.
Go ahead, please.
Okay. There is a little bit lack of understanding of what's going on over there. At first, he was playing with the magnet only. But he was relating to the properties of the magnet versus the properties of electromagnets are being a very similar one. So, let me jump. He has noticed that the magnetic field in the conductor is proportional to the inverse square law. The further we are, the less magnetic field we have, and magnetic field is at 90 degrees to the electric field. Now, this gentleman is not a gentleman from NASA. It's another gentleman. Now, he based his findings on the patent of Murray. This is the last video that I have sent to John and Dick today. And you don't have to listen to that video, just look at the schematic that is over there. Just scroll through that video and you're going to see like a front page of this pattern. Didn't you? Now, he was at the beginning of that, like, trying to understand what the principles are. He wasn't playing with any batteries at all, any current at all. He was just referring the back EMF as the force that that is in mechanical design and mechanical project that he was having and analyzing, very much alike the back EMF in electrics. In some of these videos, he related to the transformer and the way that the transformer works. So he said if there is a nut crunch, which is the point where that you stop and then you tune this motor more and it puts more and more and more and more, like a step wise. He said that by analyzing the spread of the magnetic field and dependency of the magnetic field in the mechanical structure, we may understand how to disobey the laws of conservation energy. And he was also trying to come to the nuclear structure and how the electrons goes by understanding that he was analyzing the magnetic